Beer podcast coming up this week on the Sports Desk with Ben and Austin. We'll be covering all the latest in the cricket world, both here in Australia and abroad. We've also got a bit of basketball, both the NBL and the NBA, as well as a bit of soccer. And we've also got a bit of UFC and Formula One. Don't forget Decision Desk, that and more coming up on the Sports Desk podcast right here on Sin.
It's over. It's all over. The drought. The dam wall is busted. It's 62 long years.
Cronulla have won it. Cronulla have won it. 14-12.
Is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
For all your sports news and reviews, you listen to the Sports Desk here on Sin. Hello all and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk here on Sin Online. It's the podcast with myself, Ben Pascuzzi, and alongside me, we have Austin Van Groningen. Austin, how are we, mate?
Very well, thanks, Ben. Been a terrific week for me. Not such a terrific week for the Aussies in the cricket, but we have a packed-out sporting program to discuss, and we can't wait to get stuck into it.
Speaking about the cricket, I think it's fair to say we'll start off with Australia and South Africa. I was going to say Sri Lanka. At the end of day two was washed out, unfortunately, but it's the day one result of Test 2, which has all the pundits talking, and Australia were bowled out for a measly, Austin, 85. I'll repeat that again, 85 runs. The Australian cricket team, the best 11 cricketers in Australia, got bowled out for.
It was embarrassing, Ben. There's no other way to describe it. Steve Smith playing a lone hand with his 48 not out. He scored, well, nearly half of the team's score there and really contributed strongly with the bat on an otherwise dismal day for the Aussies. Truly, I think day one of this test in Hobart was the worst day of test cricket I've seen from Australia for some time, probably going back to that horrible Ashes loss at, I'm not sure if it was at Trent Bridge, where we got bowled out
Trent
for 60.
Bridge, yep.
That was a terrible day, and this one brings back memories of that day. Coming in, being sent into bat on a moving wicket down in Hobart and going for 85 in just 32 and a half overs really does augur poorly for this test series and for the Australian test team.
It's just not a good look. And I mean, when we came in, when we removed Mitch Marsh from the squad, which was quite controversial in itself, bringing in Ferguson, we had that focus of having six batsmen. And to have six specialist batsmen as your top six to muster only 85 runs, and obviously Steve Smith, the only one there really scoring runs, 48. It's just not a good look. So just going through the top order, it was Warner with one, Burns with one, Khawaja four, obviously Smith there, 48 not out, Voges with a golden quacker, and Ferguson three, could also use Neville there, top seven, scored three runs as well. It's just not good enough. Put simply, it's just appalling.
I think probably almost for the last 10 years since the end of the really dominant era, since McGrath and Warne and the War Brothers and Ponting sort of was past his best, since all of those guys have either reached the twilight of their careers or left the team, we've been prone to these batting collapses as an Australian team, and we've seen it time and time again. And
quite recently as well.
Quite recently, we've continued to have batting collapses. I want to talk to you about this, Ben. This is an issue of why our batsmen can't sustain a solid effort, why they keep going out so cheaply and in such dramatic fashion. But look at some of these top-order batsmen. As you said, Warner, he can hold his head up high from Perth. He played very well at the Wacker there. But his performance in Hobart really
the
really
shot
poor.
He played, sixth ball of the test match, to go slashing for a ball that's about, what, 2 feet outside off. It was ridiculous. I mean, like, yeah, he goes for the shots, but do you really need to pull that shot out in the first over knowing that the ball's swinging? Like, is that really a smart thing to do? No, definitely not. So
no, that's it.
I think he definitely needs to rethink his mindset when it comes to opening the batting for Australia. We love it. We love his attacking nature, but Maybe not the sixth ball on an sixth ball of a match when it's a definitely a bowling wicket.
That's right. And when you talk about a bowling wicket, especially when the ball's swinging, one thing you'd know as a batsman is you play with soft hands. You don't slash. You just softly play the ball. That way, if you do nick one, it often won't carry to the slips, and you won't be in big trouble. Whereas if you really seize up and you play rigidly and you slash at the ball or you try and defend strongly, you risk nicking it through to slips or just slashing a shot over to the keeper or any scenario that's going to get you out. It's just not good play. I want to talk about one other guy, specialist batsman, Adam Voges. Now, Voges started his career with a sensational average. He played brilliantly against the West Indies and New Zealand in his first two Test series. Looking back, it's starting to look like those were too out of the box. I think both against weakened opponents, both against Test nations that are pretty average on the Test scene, with due respect to them, and coming up against quality opposition, he has not been able to sustain anywhere near that brilliant form that saw him start his Test career.
Yeah, I think we just got soaked up in the hype by it. I mean, like you said, he was phenomenal in his start, but the thing was, though, that was predominantly here on home soil in Australia, and Australia has been known not to be performing too well at its best overseas, and Voges certainly has been like that. He hasn't been able to reach his feats that he started off here with in Australia, but he's 37 years old. I don't know what Australia's doing playing him, honestly. Even at the time when we brought him in, he would have been about 35 when we brought him in. I think it was about two years ago.
He's only been playing for 18 months or so.
We brought him around 2-3 years ago. So I don't understand why we brought him in the first place. Yeah, he brought some success at the start, but if you're looking for some sustained success, I think you've got to look a little bit younger than 37, a lot younger than 37. So, Voges, to me, he's got to go, surely the next test or something. So, got to be youth for the Australians.
Well, look, I'm not down on Voges in particular, but he's one the selectors have to look at. And if there's one good thing to come out of this Test series, it is the selection that might come from it, the soul searching the team has to do, and some benefits down the track for us. I do want to, it's remiss of us not to mention Vernon Philander, 5 wickets for 21 runs off just 10 overs. So an amazing performance with the ball, and we shouldn't underrate the South Africans. They blew us away on that moving pitch down there at Hobart, that swinging pitch.
Yeah, so South Africa, after day one, they are 5 for 171 with Bavuma and de Kock in. Bavuma 38 not out and de Kock on 28 not out. And you know you're doing pretty poorly when day two gets washed out and that was your best performance in a Test series. Without a doubt, that was Australia's best performance. I mean, we haven't done too well at all.
It was a great day. I hope we get 3 more days of that. That's the only thing that's going to save us this match.
Yeah, it's unfortunate we've got to say that, but after that first test, it wasn't too good. We're covering that first test, Australia, they made 244 in reply to South Africa's 242, but that was after Australia were only none for 103 for Warner, Marsh, etc. went out. South Africa then went on to make 8 for 540 declared before Australia were bowled out for 361. So, not looking good for the Aussies, but you are going to go to the Adelaide Oval Test, I believe.
I will be there 2 weeks from now. I'm going for day two. We're driving up the Friday morning. We'll be there for the day nighter there on day two, and then we're driving back on the Saturday. So just a one-day expedition to Adelaide, but it is my favourite ground in the country to watch cricket, and I can't wait.
I think I'm going to put my money there that Australia will have a good performance on that day, because knowing your luck, travelling to Spotless to watch the Doggies, they got the win there, didn't they?
I've travelled well this year. There's no question about it.
That's rather luck.
Oh, well, I'm worried it might be over by day two. That's the only problem.
Unless it's a washout.
We might have to adjust plans if it is. But in any case, I'll be going to Adelaide and really can't wait for it.
Moving abroad now to India. And England and India, it's quite an interesting test match which is currently taking place midway through day four. England opened up the batting, made 537. India in reply, 488. England in their second innings in reply again, 3 for 260 with a lead of 300 plus runs. India at the moment are 1 for none. So it's going to be an interesting test match, that one, with Gambia going out 6-ball duck. What's your tip there?
Oh, this is a really intriguing match. England have backed themselves with that declaration. I think they'll get the job done on the remainder of day four and day five. I think they'll bowl India out. But it's an intriguing game, exact opposite of the sort of conditions you saw in Hobart. Real batting pitch and one that's heavily favoured the batting lineups of both teams. Credit to Ben Stokes, scored 128 in the first innings, 29 not out in the second. So it's not bad to score well over 150 runs for one wicket. And he actually came into form against the Australians here. You'll remember
he was
here in that 2013-14 Ashes series, made his test debut in Australia, and he's gone from strength to strength.
That's when he announced himself, Stokes. He's become one of the premier all-round cricketers in world cricket at the moment. And, yeah, it's good to see. It's good to see England produce some good results. It's going to be an interesting Ashes series when it comes around the next time. But moving on from cricket, I think it's time for some soccer. And the A-League season is on. And Sydney FC still lead the league. They sit pretty 15 points clear, 5 wins, no losses, Austin.
Yeah, very impressive record from Sydney, and we've spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. We just did not see this coming, let alone continuing.
Oh, it's actually 6 wins now.
6 wins, there you go, and a 2-0 win over Perth Glory there, really proving impressive.
Yeah. Melbourne City, we'll move on to some other results. Sydney, I mean, at the start of the season, we didn't really expect them to, like you said, to perform this well, but we really expect the Melbourne City to, who are the second place team at the moment. And City defeated Newcastle Jets on Thursday 2-1, Fornaroli with a double there. So City, I'm still tipping them for the title at the moment, but yeah, this early season form for Sydney FC is just, I didn't see it coming, really.
It's been very impressive. One thing about City, and I think this is similar to the Sydney Kings as well, actually, is they've assembled a great team, brilliant quality players. They've got great managers, great coach. The teams are structured brilliantly. But when you bring in this new structure, you can't expect it to click instantly and for everything to go your way from the very start. So I think City might take a little while to find their pace this year. But once they do, they'll be a real formidable opponent. Same with the Kings when we move to the NBL. I think you might see some late season dominance from them. Can't take any credit away from Sydney FC whatsoever, though. They have come out of nowhere. They've surprised us all. Maybe another upset is brewing for years 2016-17.
We'll come back to that later in Decision Desk, Austin. Moving on now, Adelaide United and Brisbane Roar tussled at a 1-1 draw, and Adelaide United remain winless for 2016-17 A-League season after, of course, being the champions last season. What's going on down there?
Well, didn't we see this with Western Sydney a couple of years ago?
Rumour has it, though, you're going to do some investigative work when you go down to watch Day 2 of the Australia-South Africa Test 3.
Well, that is
true?
Well, Ben, I can neither confirm nor deny those rumours, but there is something going on there at Adelaide. They haven't pieced it together.
Funny enough, though, last season, this is how they started. They didn't start as bad as this, but I think it took them until around 10-11 before their season got kick-started, and obviously they went on that winning run to win the championship. So maybe we're reading a bit too much into this early season start, but you can't help but not to, can you?
Well, yeah, it's true. It's a phenomenon you see in many different sports where if you win the title, it can be tougher for you to start the season strongly next year because you have a later season. You play all those finals. You play the premiership. You play the grand final. It's a later finish than anybody else. So they get their preseason started earlier than you. Your players get a nice break, which is great. They often party, which is, so you should celebrate.
Yeah.
But the reality is you come back less prepared than a lot of the other teams physically. Mm-hmm. Now, they're brilliantly experienced. They've got great ability to perform in the big moments, as we know. The same can be said of all of the premiers in all of our competitions this year. But coming back the next season, they are at a disadvantage, and it can take some time for them to rectify that bad start.
Let's hope they can rectify that bad start. Adelaide United. On Saturday, Central Coast Mariners unfortunately went down to the Wellington Phoenix 2-0. But also on Saturday, bigger result, Melbourne Victory defeated the Western Sydney Wanderers 3-0. And the Wanderers are not looking good again for the second season in a row.
Yeah, the Wanderers reminding me a little bit of, well, I keep using these AFL analogies with everything, so I'm not even going to say it, Ben. The Wanderers are just not producing what we thought and hoped.
Who's
they
the team?
Might. I was going to say Port Adelaide.
Okay.
I was going to say Port, because Port looked brilliant for a couple of years. Now they look terrible.
Yep.
And poor old Western Sydney's in the same basket as far as I'm concerned. They had that phenomenal A-League season, 2014, I think, then came out and won the...
Well, their first two seasons.
Was it the Asian Champions League?
They won the Asian Champions League.
Champions League, and then they haven't fired a shot since. So, look, we hold out hope that they're a strong club with a great culture, and they've built an enormous fan base very quickly in Western Sydney. So they should be, they are applauded for that feat. The problem is they're just not winning. They just can't win a game, Ben. What's going on?
Who knows what's going down there in Western Sydney or up there in Western Sydney. So let's hope they can turn their season around, likewise with Adelaide United. So we'll just quickly go through the ladder. So Sydney FC obviously on top, followed by Melbourne City. And rounding out the top six are Brisbane Roar, Melbourne Victory, Perth Glory and Wellington Phoenix, with the Wanderers just sitting outside of that.
The Roar are a team we don't talk enough about because they've just been consistently a finals quality team for the past 5 or 6 years. They really, they're like the Sydney of, for another AFL analogy, the Sydney of
don't
the
we love our footy. Oh, I miss it.
I miss it.
Well, you obviously miss it because of the Doggies, but yeah.
I'm still revelling. Yeah. Brisbane Roar, quality side.
I thought you were going to say Brisbane Lions. Okay, we'll move on now to basketball. And we'll stay here in Australia. We'll go with the NBL. And Austin, you went to see a match, didn't you?
I went to see my first NBL game for 10 years, Ben. I crunched the numbers. I went to see the Brisbane Bullets when they played the Tigers in a final series in 2006.
Down here?
Down here. And
at the Cage, that would have been it.
That was at the Cage. Very, very good, Ben.
The Bullets won that series?
They did, but they lost that game.
They lost that game. I remember that.
This game was, Ebi Ora was the big Nigerian recruit, and he did not perform well at all. Nah. It was a big disappointment that night, but they got the win in the series. This
if you remember
time
correctly,
around,
he came back and played for the 36ers recently.
Right.
Last season, yeah.
There you go.
I don't think he's on their roster anymore, but he came back and played.
He must be in his mid-30s by now.
Very old now, yeah. Because I remember watching him as well, because I went to watch South Dragons back in the day, so I've got to go back and watch Melbourne United one day. Yeah, that'll come. So,
retro reference, the South Dragons used to have the big flame plumes coming up at the halftime breaks before the match, the big rev up. They did this at the United game as well. So I watched Melbourne United versus Sydney Kings Saturday night at Hisense, and it was terrific. I really recommend getting along to the basketball. There's something for everyone. It's a pretty family-friendly environment. Lots of noise and bright lights and fun things happening, and a great game as well on top of it all. It was a 16-point win to the Kings. They ran out winners 87-71, and it was on the back of a brilliant fourth quarter. Very close match up to then, but it was really just Kevin Lish who caught fire at the end, sunk three or four three-pointers in that last quarter, ended the night on 29 points, combined brilliantly with Jason Kadee as well. So the small men for the Sydney Kings really dominated, scored 54 points between them and ran all over the top of United, who were depleted. A couple of big names out for them, and they'll be stronger for it.
Well, the Sydney Kings, they did redeem themselves because they did lose on Friday night to the Brisbane Bullets. But at the standings, United are on the bottom of the table.
Not good. And they can only get better from here. They've had a really poor start.
That's the positive, I guess, yeah.
But when these injured players come back, they should be a lot stronger. And the Kings have had, three losses on the trot before Saturday night, or two on the trot. They get their season back on track with this win, and they've had a grueling schedule, travelling to Perth and Brisbane in the last week and then Melbourne last night. So, a really important win for the Kings.
And interesting, though, for Melbourne United, they released Cedric Jackson early in the week, their big money recruit who, if you remember correctly, played for the New Zealand Breakers the previous seasons and was an absolute star for them. He was a previous MVP. I'm not sure if one of those last season or the seasons before, but absolute star of the game, and they've released him. So it's going to be interesting to see who they replace him with.
Yeah, I didn't follow that story, Ben. Could you tell us a little more about their justification? They just released him.
Just released him. It's just a performance-based, so.
Sure.
It's going to be interesting to see the big money recruit they bring in.
Well,
Could he turn around their season?
Maybe. We see clubs in Australian sport increasingly ready to make those big calls, and we saw one with Ben Barber and Cronulla not too long ago as well. Champion player gets the chop if they're not performing.
Yeah, so Sydney Kings' first loss of round six came against the Bullets. They went down by 13 points, 86-73, and the Bullets are quite having a very good season. They sit currently in fifth position, but it's fair to say that they've surprised many, but considering their stacked roster, I think it's good to see the Bullets back in the league, and it's good to see the Bullets doing well in the league as well. New Zealand Breakers defeat unfortunately went down to the Cairns Taipans 86-79, but it's a match between the Cairns Taipans and Brisbane Bullets, which is all the talk. The Bullets won 84-76. However, midway through the match, I think it was the fourth quarter there, the lights went out. The power went out.
Oh, gee.
And as per FIBA rules, the match was abandoned, and the win went to the Bullets ultimately.
Wow. That's a bit of good fortune there for the Bullets. That's not too good. Lights going out halfway through the game.
Don't like that, do you?
No. No, it's not great. What's worse, a day of washed-out test cricket or the lights dying on you halfway through the fourth in NBL?
I think a washed-out day of test cricket.
Surely.
You don't see anything.
Surely. But it's more...
Then again, you see reruns of old cricket matches, which is good. Get to hear Richie. Oh, got him, Bill Laurie.
Watching the cricket when there's no cricket is one of the most dreary viewing experiences that anyone can engage in, I have to say.
And it makes it worse when it's sunny outside as well.
Oh.
But then Melbourne again, knowing typical Melbourne, brought out some rain.
I've got to say, cricket programming during the washout is an interesting experiment in human psychology to see, firstly, what they put on, and secondly, who can actually bear it.
Yeah. Well, now they've got the block on because there's obviously no cricket. All right. Well, back to the basketball.
The block also describes South Africa's batting lineup pretty effectively as well. So anyway, moving on.
Yeah, nice. We could use that. Okay. Adelaide 36ers, I was going to say United there, went down to the Illawarra Hawks on Saturday, 74-85. So looking at the standings for the NBL, the Perth Wildcats sit pretty atop the table, followed by the Sydney Kings, the Breakers and the Taipans, who round out the top four. Bullets and Illawarra not too far behind. They're just down on percentage from the Cairns Taipans. It's very tight, particularly between the two Queensland teams. Only, I think it's 0.15% there between the Bullets and the Taipans. So interesting stuff there in the NBL. And as you heard here from Austin, go down, get down. Watch United if you are here in Victoria or wherever you are around Australia, wherever you are listening to us, get down and watch the NBL.
Indeed. Great night.
Great night. That's good to hear. So we'll move on now to the NBA. And no surprises here in the Eastern Conference. The Cavaliers are just killing it there. They sit atop the table, or atop the standings for the Eastern Conference, 7 wins and 1 loss. They are followed by the Hawks and the Raptors, as well as the Hornets, who started the season 6-1. So now they just dropped another match. So it's good to see the Hornets producing some form there. The Bulls sit in 5th position, followed by the Celtics, Bucks and Pistons. So probably the results that we didn't want to see, or 76ers, they've actually improved from last season. They started 0-8. At this stage last season, they were 0-8. Now this season, they are 1-7. Lost another match, unfortunately, go 1-8. So no surprises there for the 76ers. Hopefully, we see Ben Simmons coming back very soon for them. I think it's a couple of months.
Well, they desperately need him, clearly, on that form. And what did we say earlier about premiership teams struggling the next year? Cavaliers, top of the ladder. That just goes to show how classy they are and the brilliant team they've become.
Will they go back-to-back?
Ooh, maybe Decision Desk might have to answer that one.
We'll look into the Western Conference now, and the LA Clippers lead it. They have 9 wins and 1 loss at this stage of the season.
That's a little unexpected to see the Clippers all the way up there.
I think it's because Blake Griffin is just back to his best. If you remember last season, had all that controversy off the court. He didn't play too many games. The Clippers didn't get near where they were expected to finish, but after that season, Blake, he's come back this season with a bit of a reason to perform, and he's proving it. And this determination from Blake is lifting the Clippers. He's playing well with Chris Paul, so it's good to see the Clippers up there nice and early.
Indeed. Is it fair to say, Ben, that the Clippers are a cut above?
Well, according to the standings, they are. Now, the Warriors, you could probably say, are a cut above the rest. They still sit in second on the Western Conference standings. That was bad. 7 wins and 2 losses. But I think this is... that's still a good start. But considering the Warriors' lineup, when they got Durant in the team, when they brought him in, you'd expected them to be 9-0 at this stage. But this is such the heights that they've set them for themselves. Last season, they started the season with, 23 wins... before they got a loss, I think it was 23 wins, 24.
Something like that. Look, yes.
It was a remarkable season, 73-9.
They should be the best team in it, I think. But let's make those judgments out after 40 or 50 games, not after 10. You know, it's small sample size, and they should find their pace.
We'll move on now to the top five. So, or we'll do the top four, round it out. So Spurs and Thunder there. So Russell Westbrook doing well amidst Kevin Durant's absence there at the Thunder. But looking down at the table, the New Orleans Pelicans now, they second season in a row, they've had a lot of injuries again. But Anthony Davis, the numbers he's putting up, he's consistently scoring over 30 points a game, getting double-doubles, including the rebounds, the assists, you know, all that. But they're not producing the results, the Pelicans, for him. One win, nine losses.
Yeah, well, you can't thrive off just one star player. It's too easy to shut people down. And, yeah, Pelicans need to lift.
Yeah, we just realised I had a look at the time there. Okay, so we've got to go quickly to some decision desk questions, and it's really going to be rapid fire this week, Austin. So I'm going to start off really quickly. Which has been the best fairy tale of the 2016 season?
Doggies.
Doggies?
Doggies.
Why?
Because it's the Doggies.
What about the Cubs? It's the Cubs. It's got to be the Cubs, Austin.
I don't know enough about baseball. I reckon the Cubs
108 years,
well,
beats 54 years.
The Cubs,
double.
Yeah, it's got the history.
It's 60, double that.
62 years.
62 years.
Cubs have got the longest drought. Oh. That's true. I think Leicester's the most unlikely. So credit to Leicester. But for me, I can't answer anything other than the Bulldogs. Given the odds they're up against, given the financial resources that have been pumped into other clubs, especially expansion teams, compromised drafts of the past 5 years, and the fact that we have risen above so much adversity makes for me the Bulldogs the most uplifting, the most emotionally charged, and the best comeback underdog victory for 2016.
For me, Cubs, 108 years. Can't beat that, really.
All right. Question for you. Question for Ben. There's a movie, Any Questions for Ben, and we are living that out tonight. Decision desk question for you,
I've
Ben.
I've watched that.
It's a good one. Yeah. Australian Open starts in January, and Nick Kyrgios will be playing. Love him
yes.
or hate him?
Love him. Absolutely love the kid. I mean, you got reason to hate him. I mean, his antics, but he's a star. He's going to be such a superstar in the tennis world. I mean, tennis needs characters like this. I mean, this is why we see UFC with Conor McGregor, we'll talk about really quickly later on, why they're reaping the success. They need characters. It's like cricket at the moment. It's boring, isn't it? We need characters in the game. Shane Warne's come out to set it. I agree with him. And Nick Kyrgios is great for tennis. Now, I know he needs to settle a little bit on his antics on the court, but I like it. I love him, and he's going to be a superstar. Simple as that.
I tend to agree. I think he's got some... You know, he's got some behavioural problems that would be nice to be a little nicer, but we wouldn't be talking about tennis if it weren't for Nick Kyrgios. Simple as that. He's bringing fans to the game and he's a gun. He'll be a great player.
Thanks, Kyrgios. Austin, second question. Final question.
You spoke about UFC. I want to ask you a simple question, Ben. Is MMA too violent as a sport?
Yeah, it's a bit violent. Like, I like watching it, but when you consider that to all the other sports, what we call violent sports like Aussie rules and rugby, it is a bit too violent compared to those. That's too simple to say, yeah.
I think that's a fair answer.
And final one from me. Cleveland Cavaliers, do they go back-to-back?
No. I just got a feeling about the Warriors. They're just way too good. And I think they'll come good.
So you think the Warriors will come good. Okay, so that wraps up the decision desk. But we've got our final wrap-up. And Conor McGregor. He's become the first UFC fighter in history to simultaneously hold two belts in varying weight divisions. And this is just a little clip of him post-fight.
I've ridiculed everyone on the roster. I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
So that's Conor McGregor there. And this is why I like Nick Kyrgios. And this is why I love McGregor. They're characters in their sports. They're bringing fans like me. I don't like UFC, personally. Like I said, it's a violent sport, but he makes me love it. I mean, look at him. How can you not love him? The confidence on the kid, the strut about him, he just makes the sport so much more than it is. He makes it entertaining. So, Conor McGregor there, it's quite remarkable what he's done to hold two title belts in the featherweight division and the lightweight division in the UFC.
I can't talk about the sport itself. I'm no connoisseur of UFC, if there is such a thing. But I've got to say, I agree with you. He is a massive character for the sport, promotes the sport. Ronda Rousey does the same thing for the women's version of the sport. We're so lucky to have great ambassadors, well, outspoken ambassadors of these sports to help drive their popularity. And I think of Daisy Pearce and the women's footy doing the same thing. They really do bring the crowds, plain and simple.
It's very good to see. And finally, Lewis Hamilton is chasing Nico Rosberg. He's down 19 points, two races ago. So Brazil Grand Prix will be taking place overnight. Unfortunately, we can't bring you the results for that. But do tune into the Formula One. The season is coming to a close, two races to go, 19 points difference between the two Mercedes teammates. Well, that's it. That's it for this week's edition of the Sports Says podcast here in Sin. You listen to myself, Ben, and Austin. We hope you have enjoyed listening to us. And Austin, any final words before we say goodbye?
It's been a pleasure, Ben, and I look forward to the podcast next week.
Yes, we do. From all of us here at the Sports Says, we hope you have enjoyed the show. And as always, enjoy your week in sport, because there's nothing like a good game of sport, whether it be cricket, footy. You know we love it, and that's why we talk about it right here on the Sports Says podcast. Here on Sin.